This is The Topic is Trek, episode 111 for Friday, March 25th, 2022. Coming up in this episode, Star Trek is returning to the big screen sooner than you think. Discovery wraps up season 4 with a really big close encounter. Seven risks an increase in her car insurance rates. All that and more right now on The Topic is Trek. 1.21 gigawatts of Trek. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! I always get the feeling that if somebody watches the video, they think I'm a really great ventriloquist because my mouth is not moving during that introduction. I'm drinking water. It's amazing. I should be in Vegas. All right. Well, hello, everyone. I'm Clinton, one of your co-hosts here on The Topic is Trek. And of course, being a co-host means I have to have other hosts here with me. So beaming in to join me from parts unknown with the latest hip catchphrase is Mr. Craig Stepp.
You idiot.
Was that directed at him or me? I'm not sure.
I'll take your pick. I'll let y'all fight over that one.
Well, it is part of a mountain of entertainment. We're getting closer to it.
Yeah.
And also, you heard his voice. Now you can hear his voice some more. Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Hey, how's it going? Happy to be here.
It's going great. It's going great. Anything exciting happened over the last 2 weeks? Besides a whole lot of Star Trek?
Yes.
I know, right? Yeah, well, there's always stuff going on, but nobody wants to talk about that because it,
Because on this show, the topic is Trek. Yes, and we'll finally get a break for a couple of weeks after this because we'll be down to only one episode of Star Trek a week. I mean, what are we going to do with ourselves?
Inhale?
Exactly.
Go to the bathroom?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, we do have a lot to talk about because we do have three episodes of Star Trek to discuss. Mm-hmm. But we're going to start off, of course, as always, if we get permission to do so, with subspace chatter. So, Charlie, are we all set for subspace chatter?
Bridge to engine room. Charlie, are you there?
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
So we've got the all clear to go.
That's Excellent. Right. There's only
for
one.
Him,
one
no, sp- mean yes.
He's got one speed.
Yeah.
Well, recently photos were posted on social media showing actor Paul Wesley in full Starfleet attire filming a scene on the streets of Toronto. Clearly, this was for season 2 of Strange New Worlds. Speculation ran wild on which classic TOS character he would be playing. A strong contender was Commodore Matt Decker, seen in the episode, of course, The Doomsday Machine. Dun, 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 dun. The next day, Paramount Plus issued a cease and desist order.
Besides that,
they issued a press release announcing that Wesley would indeed be appearing in season 2 of Strange New Worlds, playing the role of, I wish I had a drum roll here, please, but all I have is, Spock's viewer on the bridge. A classic substitute. He's going to be playing James Tiberius Kirk. The uniform Wesley is wearing shows Captain Stripes, but obviously Pike is a captain of the Enterprise in Strange New World. So what's the deal? We may have to wait until next year to find out.
Don't!
Wow. So Pike's in and out for 1 year, one season.
I went to Internet Movie Database, which is always 100% correct, of course. Mm-hmm. And someone... Now, it doesn't have to necessarily be from the production, but someone has put in this credit and listed it as just episode 1 of season 2. But I've got a feeling I have my doubts as to whether or not that was officially put in by the production company, because usually they hold back on listing all the characters. If you go on, say, a Wednesday to IMDb, they don't list any of the actors that are going to be in the Thursday episode of Star Trek. So to like a year and a half ahead of time put this character in, I don't think so.
Can we conclude that season one is going to end on a cliffhanger with Spock taking going to Talos 4? You know, because he's got to get all burned up and stuff, and then that's why Kirk steps in.
Yeah, but that's already happened. Well, I mean,
Pike is fine now.
Right. I'm saying that the Talos 4 stuff, the original Talos 4 stuff, has already happened by this point, because we saw that on Discovery that it already happened. I'm back there again.
Oh boy, my head.
Yes, your head's starting to hurt, isn't it?
Darn Talosians. I think they're giving us an illusion that we have a successful podcast.
It's not very good illusion, but
It did seem kind of weird. It did seem weird that we saw this announcement out of the blue. It's like, oh, by the way, after they had already put out trailers and had it was like a lull. I wasn't expecting anything. And then, oh, by the way, here's Kirk. But I think you and I'm sure a lot of other people figure they were trying to get out in front of a leak, trying to control that. But
I was just thinking about the original Cage episodes, and I think, they should have taken one of those Talosians and cast Irene Ryan in there. And then when she gets strangled, Jed, Granny from the Beverly Hillbillies would have made a heck of a Talosian.
Wow.
That would be interesting. Anyway.
Hey, I've seen actors cast in crazier cross roles.
Yeah. Well, speaking of surprises, we're not sure if Paramount messed up here, but they announced something before we recorded our show this time, which is amazing.
It is.
I don't know if one of them, somebody listens there or listens to us.
Somebody pressed the wrong button and sent it out on Thursday instead of Friday.
Right.
Speaking of pressing buttons.
The new 4K version of Star Trek, the motion picture, the director's edition, will be coming out to Paramount Plus on First Contact Day, April 5th, and other people,
there we go. So there you go.
That's not the day I got my first contact.
Yeah. Right. Well, anyway, but if you don't have the streaming service, or if you just want to see V'ger on the big screen, the movie will be showing in theaters on May 22nd through and May 25th as part of the Fathom events. And those tickets go on sale April 8th. So Paramount Plus also released a short trailer for the new remaster, showing off some of the 4K goodness, which looked awesome, to be honest with you. And we will have a link to that over in the show notes for episode 111 over at thetopicistrek.com.
Ooh, watching that in 4K on my 75-inch TV. That would be sweet.
Well, and V'ger, looked fantastic. It was like
tickets. Huh? Tickets go on sale?
Yeah.
You can't just buy it on the streaming service?
No. Boy,
you watch it. You can watch it on the
Did you just service. Listen to what Craig just said?
No, I was fixing a screen timeout thing over there.
It is also available on
it's coming to Paramount
theaters
Plus,
on May 22nd.
It's coming to Paramount Plus first.
Okay.
On April 5th.
Oh, and then it will be showing in theaters.
Exactly. Yeah.
They should have released it on May 4th in theaters.
We don't even have one of our own co-hosts listening to our show. I don't even know what's going on.
One of your co-hosts has like 15 things to run on this end. Yeah. You got to cut them some slack or there wouldn't be a show.
But yeah, the special effects that they showed off, because they showed the kind of split, the reveal of what it looks like now and then. It was mind blowing. I'm curious to see
what
the whole thing.
They CGI'd V'ger.
What, did you think this is a documentary to begin with?
Yeah.
Oh man, you might as well just CGI Yoda.
Well, my thought was when I watched that and I saw I was like, okay, the CGI looks fantastic. It's in 4K, but then I started thinking, there's a lot of people that worked on a lot of that special effects, and then all of a sudden you just replaced it all.
Well, the thing is, they didn't replace all of it. I mean,
right, I don't think they did.
It really is supplementing some things. And yeah, there are some matte paintings and some effects that aren't in it any longer. Like when we go to Vulcan for Spock's Kolinar that's completely...
Yeah, they redid the sky and everything. And
right.
And well, they did that years ago, statues. Though. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's this. Well, this is the director's edition.
Right. That, right.
They now have upscaled.
So they George Lucas'd us again.
They did, but
I don't think they changed anything much with a story or timing or anything. They just redid.
Somebody think of all the egg cartons.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know that Robert Wise was really unhappy with the fact that he did not get the chance to, you know, do a test screening of this movie because literally, you know, the prints were drying on the way to the theaters. I mean, not figuratively, literally, yeah. That's what was happening. So mm-hmm. there was no time to do that. And that was his standard practice to, you know, you finish the film, you show a cut to an audience, you see what's working, what's not, you make some edits, you know, you fine tune things. Did not have that chance. So this is the sure. closest he was able to get to going back to do that. We had all these years of being able to sit with it and think about what could have changed. What was the reaction to things? So that you find some things that are shortened, some things that are lengthened, some things that are more well-defined. One of the things that always confused me was when Viger was shooting the probes at the Enterprise, that some of the things that happened just seemed to happen randomly. Well, the effect shots now more clarify what's going on in the shot. Mm. And that's the sort of thing you would do if you had had a test screening of the film. You would have said, oh, people aren't getting that. Let's do that better.
Yeah. Clinton, I just noticed your background. It looks like the 10C are sneaking up on you again.
I know. Don't
look at them.
Send them some hormones and some flashy lights. They'll be fine.
Don't look at them in the eye.
I got it. I don't know where the eye is, so I don't know how to do that.
The flashy thing.
All right. And in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada news, still nothing Trek related. In fact, we might need to check in on them to make sure everything is okay, because a few weeks ago, the Vulcan Skating Club held its first carnival in 3 years.
Oh,
good for that. But the theme was Disney villains.
Hey.
They clearly missed the memo.
Come on, hey, Vulcan. You know, Trek has plenty of villains. How about Khan on Ice?
I know.
That work for you? I mean, it's on that sleeper ship. That's how they find him. So maybe that's how you start, you know?
They can't get started until the temperature's up to 10C.
Ah, yeah, you see what I did there. International joke. There we go. And we covered a few stories this time around because we have a lot of Trek episodes to get through, but we do have links to additional stories that you can check over in the show notes for episode 111 over at thetopicistrek.com. And that includes everything from stories about the special effects that are used in Star Trek The Motion Picture, the director's edition, some hints about things you might see in upcoming season 5 of Discovery, and even a video interview with the creative team behind the upcoming Star Trek Resurgence video game. So you can find that all in there, all for your Star Trek needs.
Mm-hmm. Hey, by the way, I think a day before Paramount announced the April 5th date, I think it was TrekCore.com. Somebody had posted it a little early. So in my news feed, I went, oh, they finally gave us a date. I clicked on the link and it said, oops, 404. I went, oh, somebody must have posted early and they removed it.
Oops.
But I saw the title and it, you know, I was like, okay, well, I guess it's coming out April 5th.
Well, I hope it wasn't Trek Culture, because that would be strike two on them as far as, you know, oopsies
Trek
go.
Core, I think it was.
Oh, Trek Core. Okay. That's, yeah. Yeah, they probably got the press release the night before or something like that.
On it. Because there's the same title now, and it's a live article. It wasn't another day.
You can trust us to post your articles on time.
That's right.
Yeah, just tell us after we record.
We'll get it up within the next 2 weeks. No problem.
That's right.
Maybe that's the hint of, you know, like, yeah, sure. We'll make sure you guys never get anything. We release everything the day after you're done. Yeah,
that's right. We're like the janitor sweeping up behind everybody. Making sure we got the news out there and after everybody.
Sounds like a good idea for a parade.
Yeah, Clinton, doesn't it?
Sweeping it up does. After the janitor at the end of a parade. Yeah, where have I seen that before?
It's very painful memory. Very, very warm. Anyway, well, it's time to come to our favorite part of the show, and that's when I get to tell Charlie goodbye. So good to bye, Charlie.
I want to stay.
Wow. Eric's
is cruel. Happy about that.
He's yeah. cruel. He's
laughing in his face.
I tell ya.
And stay out.
That's right.
All righty. It's time for another special effect because we want to give a quick spoiler alert because we're going to be talking about a lot of Trek episodes here.
Are we giving spoiler alerts? Spoiler
alert. Here you go. All right. We're going to talk about the season finale of Star Trek Discovery and the two most recent episodes of Picard. But let's begin with Discovery. Who wants to give us the recap?
Go ahead, Craig. Okay.
All right. So Star Trek Discovery, Coming Home, written by Michelle Paradise. And Mrs. Paradise is an executive producer and showrunner for Discovery. And directed by Olatunde Osunami. And it's become a tradition for Osunami to direct the season finale of Discovery, because he's done it before. So anyway, the brief synopsis is when we open with Discovery still trapped inside an orb created by the 10C, while Tarka continues his mission to reach the hyperfield power source and use it to jump to an alternate universe he refers to as the Kalalis. Even after freeing the Discovery at the cost of the spore drive, the 10C seemed puzzled by the actions of the humans in both ships. We were too. If Tarka cannot be stopped and negotiations fail on Earth and Titan, and Navarre are doomed.
Dun, dun, dun!
So, we start off in this episode with something that I couldn't identify at first. I don't know, did either of you recognize that it was Starfleet HQ warping through space?
It was a whisk. They were about to make some scrambled eggs.
Yeah. No, actually, I didn't at first. I was like, whoa, what is this? So what ship is this? And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, it's the HQ. Oh,
it's with when they take the Starbase from Star Trek the Motion Picture and turn it upside down to be the research station. It's right. Like you can't notice it anymore.
That's right.
So this was turned on its side. And
I'm glad y'all had the same reaction because at first I was like, what am I looking at here? It looks pretty cool.
Yeah. And I was
that's interesting.
It was a little confusing because and then you see Tilly, Tilly's back. You see her running around and talking to some cadets and you're no longer cadets. And then there's other people running around. I'm going, wait, what did we just walk into? It even the second time I was still gluing pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
No, not your Legos, Chuck.
Well, speaking of gluing pieces together, we also found out that Starfleet HQ has a unique feature to it.
Decks can just fly out at warp on their own.
Yep. I know. That was interesting, wasn't it?
Handy.
Hope they do all the seals. It's also, I'm thinking about that. That means that there's this hole in the middle of every one of those ships because that.
Watch your step when you get to deck six.
Hey, you know, I'm gonna take the turbo lift down.
Well, I don't mean that. I mean that point as well. But I'm talking about the fact from all these conference scenes and so forth. We know that if you look down from this certain deck here, there's a giant empty space in the middle that just keeps going and going and going. So all the decks have a giant empty space in the middle of them.
Well, then the shield comes up, you know, because every time there's something open to space, a shield comes up.
Well, I suppose you just use programmable matter to seal that right
well,
up.
Well, you know, that
is, I was thinking about. Is that Billy Mays' flex seal of the 30%?
Yeah.
Got a hole in your space station? Spray on programmable matter. I'm Billy Mays. Yes.
You know, I was thinking with the programmable matter, you know, they have ships that are a defined shape, I guess, for different uses. But why don't they just have the ships just morph into whatever they need at the moment?
Budget. I'm sorry, what was that?
Bookship does something like that.
Yeah, Bookship kind of did that. But I meant like
because it's a presto changeo button,
like the Voyager we've seen. And what if it went just changed into a different shape for whatever mission it was on and situation it was in?
We get a mention of it early in the show, but then we get to see it later in the show. They mention the Mitchell is coming.
Right. And of course, that's named for Kenneth Mitchell.
And
I did not catch that the first time around. The second time I watched it, I went.
They also have a Yelchin. They also have a Yelchin.
Yes.
There as well.
And what was the Nog was mentioned in the show. And there was a picture on Twitter today from Kenneth Mitchell with a model that a whole bunch of people, I don't know if it was actors and production crew, they signed it. They signed a model of the USS Mitchell.
Yeah, they made it for him. It looked pretty cool. I think it's on Twitter. He posted the picture.
He must have. They must have said, don't post this till the 23rd.
Exactly. Well, kind of spoilery if you do that.
Oh, I'm sure they gave it to him a long time ago.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, the other ships that we hear called out are the Pathfinder, the Tikhov, the Credence, and also the Nog and the Yelchin. So, yeah, we got a couple of name drops in there on ships, which some people think is a good idea. Some people think isn't a good idea. I think it's a great idea because
me too.
These names are generic names, and you think about how far in the future you are. How many ships there must be out there. You can't just keep naming ships for
random whatevers or history or
the Enterprise. You know. The Enterprise.
Also, you know, if you think about the names of the ships in Star Trek history, you got a lot of very Earth-centric names for Starfleet, which is supposed to really not just be from Earth.
Right.
Well, the Vulcan ships had Vulcan names.
They did. But a lot of the other
I'm waiting for the USS Tuvok.
The T'Pol?
The T'Pol, yes.
The Savik. There we go. Okay, and so we jump from there.
Tuvix, I'm sorry.
No, too soon.
That ship is just cobbled parts together.
It's like two ships pushed together.
That's the ship you get when you just kind of morph it and it gets stuck in certain ways. Yep,
the pack lids use that one.
We can't explain how it works, but it just kind of...
We need to crash the ship into a planet real fast.
Says Janeway.
So, they're trying to take care of things at Earth. We jump back, and poor Discovery is just stuck there in the orb and trying to get itself out. And Tarka's doing what Tarka's been doing for like 5 episodes.
Yeah, working the console.
And just saying, I'm going to get there. I'm going to, at least at this point, this episode didn't have another, if Book just understands, because at this point they know that Book is a prisoner being trapped.
Let's give him one more last chance.
He's not a prisoner for long. He built a cat door into his force fields.
He did. I thought that was amusing that he does this, and the look on Reno's face when she sees it, a cat door, really?
Yeah, that's right.
Really?
Okay, so he tweaks the hollow emitters to make a cat door. But then when he walks up to Tarka, this force field comes up and he punches his way through it. Why couldn't he just punch his way through the other one?
Yeah, I was confused. So where does that force?
Yeah.
Is that force field?
There's something was amiss on those two things.
Because they're definitely outside of that area.
Yeah, he must have had like a personal space emitter or something.
Or to fool Tarka, maybe they were throwing up just a holographic, but not force field, the holographic image of the force field, so he would think it was still active.
That's a pretty deep read.
Well, Tarka's not going to go over there if it looks like they're outside of the force
field. No, he wasn't over there. He was at the console. They walked up to him, and he said, "Hey, Tarka," and then, voom, this thing comes up, and he punches right through it. I thought he was at the console when Book surprised him.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. I'd have to go back and take a look.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there are people scrambling right now to check on that. But
my assistant, go look at that. Go check it out and let me know.
So we know that there's no way to stop Tarka's ship from Well, there's no way to stop it. It's headed towards this power source.
He used my favorite recursive fractal encryption key. I invented right. that, you know.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Well, I will at some point because, you know, time traveler came future. Back and told me. Yeah.
And the orbs are not able to get a hold. Now, see, this is why Bookship does this, because the orbs were trying to catch Bookship before it could mm-hmm. get to the power source.
Right.
But they couldn't lock onto it because Tarka kept changing the configuration mm-hmm. of the ship to confuse them.
Not at first. At first, it was just flying around. And then,
first he said he couldn't find the presto changeo button.
Yeah,
presto. And then he said, "Oh, here it is." And when he slapped that down, then it started the
shuffle play button.
Yeah, exactly.
They needed some music,
but they had to stop the ship, even though it was out of control. So how were they going to do that? Q General Ndoye, who has previously confessed to aiding Book and Tarka yep. and been thrown into the, well, confined to quarters or thrown in the brig, one or the other. And she's brought in the bridge because she's a good tactician.
Well, wait a minute. You missed the fact of how they got out of the bubble. Because by that point.
Yes, well, I mentioned that in the beginning, but yes, they spin in place. And
pretty much blow a fuse. Drive,
right. So they spin in place and it shatters the orb because they figure that's equivalent
to the energy has to go somewhere.
Right. It's equivalent to the amount of energy that Book's smaller ship had needed to break free. So they needed a larger amount of energy to do it themselves.
And they said, if we do this, we'll lose the spore drive and we'll be stuck out here for decades. And I went, hello, Voyager.
Right. Yeah.
But Ndoye says, well, if you crash a shuttle into Book's ship, that'll take care of that.
Yeah.
But she points out that it's a suicide mission, essentially.
But everybody lived.
Everybody lives.
Hey, I've seen this story before. I've seen this story before. Did you ever go on Back to the Future, the ride?
Yes.
Yes.
You know, where you had the DeLoreans, you had to go the bumpers.
Well, that's what it amounted to, because there's a big explosion. There's all this debris flying around inside Book's ship, but they're mm-hmm. able to beam Ndoye back. And they say, oh, and Book and Tarka, yeah, they're still doing fine over there. No problem at all.
Well, I thought it was interesting that Detmer stepped up and went, I'm ready, Captain. Like, no, you can't kill Detmer. Well, apparently they can't kill Ndoye either.
and it's like, imagine how Detmer feels like, really, Ndoye, you couldn't have said that like immediately. You had to wait till I stood up.
We're going to need a really good pilot. Crickets, crickets, crickets. Right. Oh, sorry. I was drinking something over here.
Yeah.
I was dreaming of rabbits and I couldn't.
And then what she crashes into him, they beam Ndoye back. But Book and Tarka have one last argument, I guess.
Argument and
Book wins this time.
Yeah.
You should have been there for me. Tarka breaks down. Okay, after all this time, you couldn't have gotten through to him earlier.
Yeah, he breaks down, but I think he still believes that he's doing the right thing, even though he breaks down.
He doesn't want to stop at this point.
Yeah, and that's a good thing because he can't. Although he's going to find out whether just smashing into the hyperfield will do it, because he's not hitting and going for the energy source anymore at that point. The ship has been knocked off that course by the shuttle, and it's just going to slam into the hyperfield.
So Book beams back to Discovery, sort of. And then you get to see some really good acting come out of Sonequa Martin-Green.
Yeah, she...
I agree.
She, you know, the awkward moment on the bridge, because...
Yeah, you have to be in command, but someone she loved is taken right in front of her eyes. And then, well, later she does some more good acting.
It's also interesting because she had to play off the shift that you have all this grief.
Yeah.
And then somebody says, oh yeah, the 10C, remember them? They're sending another orb over here. And she's like, oh great.
Back to work.
That's just great.
That's right.
Meanwhile, back on Earth, the debris field is starting to get in the way, and Tilly and Vance are going to have a drinking party.
They are.
Well, we did talk about that, by the way, the debris field. Why weren't we seeing anything yet? Remember last episode we were talking
right,
about?
Right. So we do see it. It does come in apparently like on schedule and a lot of it. So for some reason, Vance has to be the one to tell Earth to put up their defense shield. Now, maybe it's because the shield will prevent Federation ships from, you know, Starfleet ships from getting in there to assist. So mm-hmm. once they put up the shield, that's like, that's it. No one else is coming out. No one else can come in to rescue you because that shield is up and it's a defense shield.
Mm-hmm.
But it can't stop all of the debris because we see a huge piece of it just go flying through
mm-hmm.
and causes big explosion or,
it looked
or
like,
eruption.
Yeah, it looked like dinosaur equivalent size from my perspective. Like, ooh, there's a catastrophic dinosaur
or like
ending.
The swath on Enterprise when they cut in Florida.
Yeah. Right down to Orlando. There we go.
Oh, there goes Disney.
Tell that to Vulcan, Alberta, Canada. But anyway, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing because at the end of the episode, when we have everybody back at Earth, you still see these giant plumes in these two spots on Earth. And apparently, oh, yeah, well, Titan got the worst of it. Well, but so they must have some really severe ground and atmosphere control set up on Earth to take care of that kind of cloud.
Yes, there's a big air purifier out in the Pacific.
It's a giant made vacuum cleaner thing out in space. Yes.
They get to talk to the 10C face, quote unquote, face to face with Burnham and the whole crew. And
who just stand around Saru, like Star Trek the motion picture looking at the view screen.
Saru yeah. is doing the translations, and all I could think of was, I'm sure they cut out all the time between when they were translating and thinking about it, processing. It felt like a real classic Kirk moment where you have to talk your way out of the alien situation, say, hey, you're hurting us. But the one that threw me was obviously when Book comes back, spoiler alert, you know, and we have some tears of joy. And then he says, that's not good enough.
Not good enough.
And I went, like, that's pretty ballsy. That's yeah. Good. Yeah. Burnham should have been going, time out there, buddy.
Yeah. Stay on the pissing off the 10C.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they went for it. They went for it. And then they open up the wormhole one last time, which I thought was really suspicious. Like, didn't we just tell you not to use that thing?
Well,
wormholes are okay, but the DMA is not. So, yeah, let's just send him home. It's like, oh, there goes my Voyager show.
Yeah, maybe they open it one last time, even at the cost of their hyperfield, just to get rid of them.
Like, yeah.
No, you guys need to go away, far away.
You're like ants at a picnic.
Yeah, they're after they send them off, then the aliens are talking to each other. Oh, I can't believe we had them longer than
really your harsh my mellow. Yeah.
Mondays, am I right?
Yeah. Talk about overstaying, you're welcome.
Yeah, it's
And then at the very end, we get a surprise guest star.
Oh, we're jumping to that point. Okay, yes, we do get a surprise, which I have no feeling about one way or the other. I mean,
did a pretty good job. Stacey Abrams.
Stacey Abrams appear as the president of United Earth.
Yep.
And she comes on board because she's going to be negotiating with President Relic for bringing United Earth into the Federation. And president comes and says, nothing to talk about.
No discussion. Yep.
Yeah.
But President Mahone, the other president.
Relic.
I want to say Laurel. I'm like, that's not right. I know that's not right. No, similar letters, planet. Wrong order. Yeah, so
it's not mother.
Relic,
wrong planet. She's the president.
Relic says, you know, you're not. We had a discussion. You weren't ready for the Voyager captaincy, and I think you are now. I was like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, she's like, you know, I wouldn't take it. Yeah. Okay. I get it.
Thanks, you make me laugh.
Yeah, the last part of this episode was very much like the end of The Hobbit. You know, you have lots of wrap-up.
Lots of wrap-up. There was like 20 minutes of wrap-up in this one-hour show.
Yeah, so they're sitting around talking around the ship like I'm the end of, like the Lord of the Rings.
Jumping around and dancing in slow motion. Yep.
Yeah.
Tilly comes back on board. There's a reunion for that. We have the president talking with Admiral Vance. Saru is talking with Tarina.
You got Stamets and Culber are going to go.
Yeah, Burnham is talking with Books. Yeah, Stamets and Culber are going to Puerto Rico. A lot of the other bridge crew are going to be meeting up someplace and say, hopefully, you know, everyone will be there. If, you know,
I'm going to Disney World. What do you do after you save the universe?
I mean, it was good to wrap up that stuff. Cause I think it gives them a clean slate and, you know, some things that are also going to obviously be carried on through to season 5. But it came back to my same argument that the pacing of the season was awful.
I thought it was a good wrap up to it. In fact, that's what it says right under the title on mine. It says Discovery season 4, episode 13, Coming Home. Good finale to a slow season.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like I said, I don't mind all that wrap up. And people say, well, how can you have the communication with the 10C? If you ended that and then did the wrap-up show as its own show, that would really drag. Mm-hmm. And I'm feeling like, well, the communications with the 10C was the thing that I thought got just the short rift of the whole thing. When I say that Saru is a really good typist, is because we go from just being able to communicate simple thoughts to Burnham and Book and the president rattling off paragraphs.
Right.
The 10C about stuff. It's like, wait, whoa. Hey, what's going on here? And we still have no Dr. Hirai.
He was just standing there. Isn't he the linguist?
He
said nothing. He did nothing.
He said one thing. They're sending a reply.
Yeah. That was really poorly written in the last couple episodes.
Popping his M&Ms.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, they're sending a reply.
Poor Harai. He did not get the love he needed.
And I mean,
they introduced him kind of late in the season. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, what's he going to do?
Not much.
Yeah.
So the question becomes, with his late introduction and not much to do here, but they made a point of having him there, are we to assume that he will become a recurring character?
Maybe.
I'm just wondering. You know, because you need to have... The thing is, if you need to have somebody in charge of that type of thing, you really need to have used him a lot more in this.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
To set him up a little bit, yeah. Well, speaking of setting up, we never found out what was more important to Dr. Kovach.
No, we didn't. I think what we found out was that... I'm not in these last couple of episodes.
Yeah. He's flipping through the script. I'm done here.
I totally agree with you guys. This whole season is so uneven. And I did like the last one better than the last, three?
Right.
Four.
It was
four
a good arc, but it was only like a 6 or 7 episode season.
Yeah. So much could have been trimmed out. And I think that between trying to communicate with the 10C.
I was just trying to find them.
And the, as usual, amazing effects that they have for this. And the acting. It's like the acting's there. The special effects are there. The core story is there. It just was stretched out too long.
Yep. Okay.
All right.
That's our final vote there.
All right. So I make this confusing. We'll rate it on 1 to 10 based on number of 10Cs. How about that?
Okay.
So I will start with me. I am going to rate our season finale as, I'm going to rate it an 8. I feel like I like the things that happened in the episode.
Yep.
I just wish they'd happened spread out a bit more.
Right.
But I can't say that I fault what we got in the final episode. aside from we still don't know what the deal is with Tilly and will she be back. But aside from that, okay, I'll go to Craig next.
I'm also going to give it an 8. Again, I thought I liked it, and I think they wrapped up pretty well. I did like the reunion at the end. You know, color me nostalgic. I don't know. But just I liked the end. So I'm going to give it an 8.
All right. And what say you, Chuck?
I also give it an 8 of 10 C's.
So
I think we're all in agreement on this one.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Well, it's time to move on to Picard now.
All right.
Assimilation.
So I will have you read this a bit about this one, Chuck.
Okay. Star Trek Picard, Assimilation, Season 2, Episode 3. Written by Kylie Rosetter and Christopher Monfetti or Monfett. Ms. Rosetter, now too many E's and TTE's in here.
Indeed.
She's previously served as a writer's room assistant on Picard. Mr. Monfett has also served as a producer on Picard, as well as a writer on a series such as 12 Monkeys and 911. Not Rescue 911.
Correct.
Okay. And not TJ Hooker.
No.
Or Emergency. Well, if you're really going back into the 70s.
One out of 12.
Directed by Leah Thompson. That Leah Thompson?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, how about that? What do you know? Of course, we know her as Lorraine McFly from Back to the Future, but apparently she also goes to the year 2022 to help out with this show. She's also become a prolific director, helming episodes of Resident Alien, Stargirl, The Goldbergs, Young Sheldon, and more. That's not the name of the show. That's just, you know, there's other things she's done.
Correct.
So here's a little synopsis of the show. Rejoining the story after the Confederation has boarded La Serena, and I can talk today, and severely wounded Elnor, the crew is able to free itself. Were they also in a bubble?
No.
Oh.
No, sort of, but their own bubble.
Okay. Then with the assistance of the Borg Queen, they perform a time travel slingshot around the sun. Where have we heard that before? Arriving in Earth in 2024. Yes, it's starting to smell like Star Trek 4 movie. The ship is forced to crash land in a dense forested area that Picard refers to as home. The Borg Queen is injured and unconscious, but begins drawing power from the ship to heal herself, an action that ends up killing Elnor. Raffi, who is very bitter by this point, Seven, and Rios are beamed to Los Angeles to look for the alien queen, or what she referred to as the Watcher. Not to be confused with Henry Cavill's The Witcher.
No.
Picard and Geralti remain on board the ship to try to revive the Borg Queen. Ooh, lots of stuff happening in this episode.
Yeah, and first off, let us be clear on this. When Picard and Geralti say that what they're going to be doing is trying to revive the Borg Queen, a lot of the other crew is not really down with that.
Yeah.
They really would rather like to see her dead.
Yeah, why is that? Hmm.
And it's odd when, you have Picard in the position of having to defend and protect the Borg Queen. I mean, talk about awkward.
Right. It is awkward.
Yeah, but as you said, Geralti, I have a note here that she went right to the third stage of grief.
Yes.
Anger and bargaining. You know, she lashes out at Picard. She lashes out at the Queen. She lashes out at Q. She lashes out at the way Q and Picard kind of play around with people's lives. And she starts bargaining, talking to Geralti, saying, so if we fix the timeline,
he'll come back, right?
Elnor comes back, right? And she says, I don't know. I choose to say he's coming back. And she's just like, she's just going for it.
Yeah.
Which leads to, jumping the gun on a lot of things that happened with her. I think, she's got to tamp that down. I think we're finding otherwise they're going to have real problems later on.
Right.
Seven, I thought, really, we're starting to see that Seven is settling into this concept of being human.
Yeah, I thought so too. And I think it made me think that it's because she doesn't have her Borg implants. She's not different than the rest of humanity. So right. Therefore, she's very at ease with herself.
Right. She beams in and the little girl sees her. Yep. And she says, Are you a superhero? Yeah. And her comeback is great.
Yeah.
She's like, yes, can you keep a secret? She winks yeah. and walks off.
That's right.
You know, that is not what Seven of Nine would have done. You know,
not all capes wear capes, or not all heroes wear capes.
That's right. Sometimes they just carry phasers.
Yes, right.
Well, I at first I thought Crystal Ball's beam in was just for comedic effect. Because mm-hmm. he comes in sort right. of outside of a building, hits his face on a fire exit, and then flips yeah. around. No, he was out cold. You can see
blood coming out of his yep. out of his face.
Yeah, so. And that was the setup for this painful storyline. But huge statements in this show and the next about the state of humanity and human affairs right now.
Oh, yeah, right. absolutely. Right. And climate change and...
Yes. I think that's where you start to, you know, the Star Trek IV vibes in this show are both very obvious.
Yeah.
We'll talk about one of those in the next episode. Right. But also, you know, more just it's a commentary on the state of things.
Yeah.
You know, in the current year, or in this case, like 2 years from now. Like
1 year from now. Like a few months from now.
2024?
Year and a half.
Oh, I thought they were in 2 years from now. Sorry, my mind is already racing down the road.
don't rush 2024.
I want to get away from 2020 as fast as possible.
Because we have the sanctuary districts that we see in Deep Space Nine
yep.
are clearly there in this Los Angeles. As they were in San Francisco and all the other cities. And as you know, that this was the beginning of, we have the Bell riots are yet to come, and the Bell riots will still come if they fix the timeline. So it's a very interesting tact they're taking. Yeah. When they get up to the top of the skyscraper and Seven is looking out over the vista, and you can see the
forest fires.
Wildfire.
Yeah.
She said, maybe this is how the future begins right here with like this. But yeah, we get to see them also talk. Well, Seven does the talking.
You're not going to let, what was it? You're not going to let Fred be cooler than you.
No, it's Kevin.
Kevin. So I'm cooler than Kevin.
I'm funner than Kevin.
I was trying to remember. I'm sorry. You talked about the Bell riots.
Yes.
I was trying to remember what year that was supposed to happen. It is supposed to happen in 2024.
Right. So
in September of 2024.
Oh, so, yeah. They better get the timeline fixed. So anyway.
So they have the, it's funny. It would be funny if they saw Cisco and everybody walking around.
You're here early.
They'd also be in the wrong city if that happened. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You need to go someplace else. Well, now.
It's a different timeline.
Yeah. I see. Meanwhile,
back on the ship,
bad idea.
You know, there's no good way out of this. Yeah. Agnes says I should merge with her to help her repair. And then she can help us. Yeah. And Picard's going, no. Well, then you help her. He's like, no, she knows my mind and she'd be, the force would be down in a second.
They were trying to eradicate all the Borg in this timeline. Because it's not a good idea to hang out with them.
Right. But somehow she convinces Picard that this is a great idea.
And, you know, Alison Pill did a great job with that particular scene where she was going back and forth.
Because the queen is going through all her emotions. Oh, here's...
Rummaging around like an attic.
Here's humor. Good luck. Just room full of mirrors to deflect away from me. And anger, where she just starts to yell at Picard. And,
yep.
All sorts of emotions.
You just picture the Borg queen in there pushing buttons, right?
Yeah.
Ooh, right. What does this button do?
So Girardi is telling Picard that she's fine and she's, you know, doing what she needs to get done. And Picard is monitoring this thing. It's like 70% assimilated, which I didn't know was a scale you could actually look up. But
you know, I thought once the nanites were in you, it's like, you're done.
It's like loading.
Yeah, exactly. So she gets all the way to 90% before he pulls the plug on the.
Well, it usually happens when you install like Windows, it gets up to about 90% and it stays.
Yeah, it gets frozen at that point.
You got a lot of time.
The first second that she and the Borg Queen were both coming out of Girardi's mouth, it's like, okay, that's it. We're done.
You know? Uh-huh. Yeah. But no.
He waited. He just kept waiting.
Let's just have more fun with that.
Of course, we find out that what other consequences might be out there.
I don't trust her anymore. I lost all trust in her because you figure there's some sort of Trojan horse that the Borg Queen put in her. And even in the next episode, I'm like, she's going to be the next Borg Queen. I mean, she's the worst person to try and put up a defense, honestly.
Because I believe that the Borg Queen was genuinely surprised.
Yes.
That Girardi was able
that
to
was
steal
a
the
great statement.
And it says, you've done something really horrible. You've impressed me.
Right. You know, it's like, didn't know it was a job interview.
Yeah, well, don't need to see your CV.
That could be pretty prophetic.
Well, you know, I was thinking she was convincing Picard to join with the Queen, yet she couldn't even sit at a bar and have a drink and talk to a man properly.
Well, on Risa, no less.
Well, yeah, that's what the Borg Queen is using against her, is that, you know, she's so shy, she has no lonely, you have no friends, you're lonely, you know, if you become one with the collective, you know, you
embrace you.
Well, goes at this away. Point, it'd be a collective of two.
It would be, but it's a start. It's a start.
It's like two crows are the start of a murder.
Every good conga line has to start with one person.
Right. So I have a note here about what I found interesting in this episode. Before Rios and Rafi and Seven beam out, Girardi basically says everything that's going to happen because she says, don't bring future tech.
Yep.
Don't draw attention to yourself. No hospitals, no authorities, you know, anything that can scan you and find your ID implants and vaccination chips. You know, it's like, of course, I got a kick out of vaccination chips. I'm sure some people had a lot of.
Please invent those soon.
As I say, she actually laid out the every plot point for the
because like step. 3 minutes later, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, and conspiracy theories with those vaccination chips.
Exactly, that's what I mean.
She's confirmed it.
And we have the mention of butterfly, which they mentioned a couple of times. So that's now a shorthand that no one really explains the butterfly effect anymore.
Yeah.
But they mentioned butterflies. And so everything that they do is supposed to have consequences. Now, the thing I thought about this is don't bring future tech. They all bring their comm badges with them.
Yes.
Because they need them.
Or at least display them on the outside of their shirt.
Yeah. They don't wear them inside. They have them right there.
But just put it in the pocket.
And then it won't fall out, Chris.
Rios. Yeah. My goodness. Yeah, that gets found by the kid. Rios gets,
and it gets
back,
left on the counter.
And then it's left on the counter. Now, we'll talk about that in a minute. But so, this whole idea of all the things not to do, just check the boxes. They did every single one of them.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
It becomes more like a scavenger hunt. Let's steal a vehicle. It's on the list.
Scratch it off. We did it.
And we get a chance to see Rios interacting with Dr. Teresa Ramirez, I believe it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't say her last
name
in the episode, but I went to various sources to find what her last name was to make sure it wasn't Rios, because that would be a time paradox going on there. But
Mom?
She's future Ms. Rios.
And we get a great scene where she gets the best of Rios when she says, tell me.
Kissing you is like kissing my brother.
Yeah, exactly. And Lance Thompson's going, this all seems much too familiar. we get to see her, you know, Rios, why don't you tell me the story about this? Your youngest memory as a child. And so he's telling this really deep felt story. It's just a psychot to distract
the machine. Ow! Yeah. We've seen that before, though. Wrist. I can't remember where we've seen it, but I know we've seen that before.
Oh, well, it's a, I mean, it's not the first time it's happened. I don't know if it's happened in Trek before or not, but it is not the first time we've seen that type of thing. But I thought it was interesting that you're getting this story. Like, you start to get into it going,
yes,
ooh, that's an interesting story. And blah, blah, blah. And then
it's a more colorful way of doing, okay, on the count of three, one, crack.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Do we want to go directly on to the next episode before we rate these, or do we want to rate this one first to keep them straight?
Let's keep them straight.
Okay.
Diane will love us.
All right. So we'll
do it. We'll do them separate, keep them straight, and then we'll average it and divide it by two.
And then multiply by 13.5.
No, 15.
By pi.
15 and was in the next show, Craig.
I know.
All right. So we'll go in reverse order. So we start with Chuck, then, I believe.
I'm going to give this one an 8.5. I like the way it was pulled together. It had a few missing pieces to it, shall we say. Like you said, let's make a to-do list for everybody.
Yeah.
a challenge scavenger hunt. But, you know, Allison's acting when she was taken over by the Borg Queen made up for some of the flaws. And yeah, 8.5 for me.
Okay. How about you, Craig?
I'm going to give it an 8.5 as well. I enjoyed it. I like seeing them trying to figure out 2024 a little bit, you know, which is a world that we're familiar with. And I like that. So, on top of that, again, Allison Peel was really good and her interaction with the Borg Queen. So yep. 8.5.
All right. And I'm going to rate this one. I'm torn between 8.5 and a 9 for this one, because I thought a lot of heavy lifting in this episode, and between the acting, the writing and the directing on this. So excellent job, Ms. Thompson, that there was just so much to enjoy. I mean, it's one of those things where you have subtle references, as I talked about, to Star Trek IV. And one of them I'm calling out to say why I'm wavering is when they're traveling back in time. If you remember in Star Trek IV, you concentrate on Kirk, you zoom into him, and then you see that whole sequence of events.
I wanted to see more of those lava lamp people.
Well, you don't see that. However, and what happens in that sequence, if you're listening to in that sequence,
you can hear,
you
voices.
Hear a line of dialogue from everybody in one of that character. And it's from the past. It's from what is about to happen. So when you're watching this episode, when they're going backwards in time, you see everybody's face, and everybody has a very specific expression on their face. You have Girardi is shedding a tear. Picard is smiling. Seven has a look of kind of this subtle amazement or awe. Rios has got a big smile of joy. It's like there are reasons why all that is in there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Don't course, know what they are yet. But just like so many little tiny things in this episode. So I'm going to go with a 9 on this episode.
Nice.
Because I just really, really enjoyed it.
Nice.
Yeah, we didn't see during the time travel thing, the outline of the whale. You know,
no, that would have been very confusing.
And yeah. It's just an artifact of traveling around the sun. You know, you're going to get a whale.
That's exactly. Right. It's one of the space whales, like in The Hitchhiker's Guide.
That's right.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.
Okay. And a bowl of petunias.
All right. And our third episode is Star Trek Picard Watcher, teleplay by Juliana James and Jane Maggs, story by Travis Fickett and Juliana James, and directed once again by Leia Thompson.
Hooray! Yeah.
Brief synopsis. Picard is unable to communicate with Rafi, Rios, or Seven, so he decides to seek out the Watcher himself using the coordinates Girardi stole from the Borg Queen. He leaves Girardi on board La Serena to work on the transporter and communications. The Queen uses this opportunity to attempt to seduce Girardi towards assimilation. Rafi and Seven must try to locate Rios and rescue him before he is disappeared by immigration.
Come to the collective. We have chocolate chip cookies.
Exactly. Yeah, and the queen gets a great opportunity to bargain with Jurati in this episode because she needs help to fix the transporters in a hurry. Yeah,
I did think it was interesting when the Borg queen was like, so what do I get out of this kind of question? I was like, oh, wow, she's actually trying to negotiate.
And I was taken aback at first when Jurati says, me. I'm going, whoa, wait, ho, whoa, wait, what? But she's talking about them kind of basically sitting around and having a little chat session.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like,
that's different.
I was like, what, you're going to hook yourself up and just go ahead and finish the assimilation?
But poor Rios, he's taken off and put into...
Into the clink.
He's tasered.
Okay, I got a trivia question for you. I may be one of five people that recognize the guy who tased him.
He looked familiar, so go ahead.
The actor's name is Leif Gantfort, and he was a principal character and producer from The 60-Yard Line. Now, if you remember, The 60-Yard Line was that rom-com with the Green Bay Packers. I met that group at Phoenix Comic-Con back in 2016 when they were premiering the film there. And I've stayed in touch with the director/star of the show, Ryan Churchill. And I said, Ryan, look who I found. I just sent it to him tonight. I took a screenshot and said, look who I found in the latest episode of Picard. He sent back a heart. You've launched his career. He's got that face. He plays these characters really well. Like, I just want to punch the guy.
Yeah, and you certainly do want to do that with this guy.
Yeah.
Well done, Leif. Well done. So, yes, we have an interview with him somewhere.
That's excellent. Right. Excellent.
I went, holy crap, it's Leif. Nobody else knows that. Like, that would have been fun to shout out in the theater on the cruise. Yeah. Everybody's cheering for, you know, Elnor. Yay! Everybody's cheering for, you know, there's John Delancey. Yay! And there'd be one guy going, it's Leif!
Yeah.
Go, Leif Erickson? Who are you talking about?
Leif Garrett?
Leif Gantfort, everybody. Leif Gantfort, everyone.
So Rios doesn't get a chance to go many places in this episode besides the holding cell and the bus. Now. But
he's taking places.
Yeah, but he gets a fair amount of screen time because, first of all, he tells Leif exactly who he is and why he's here. Exactly. Straight up what the deal is.
No one's gonna believe there goes the timeline thing.
Right.
Yeah, but of course, nobody believes it. Nobody. Yeah, just, no, I'm from the future. Down.
I think he even assumes that the name he's giving him is fake and he doesn't even bother with that.
I love how people say, Crystal Ball, is that a stage name?
Yeah.
Right.
And he also gets a scene with the doctor before she is released.
Yep.
So,
back at Chateau Picard, we learned quite a bit about Picard's history.
We're
jumping around a bit, but okay.
Right. So, then Rios is put on the bus.
Time is linear. We're going through it.
Exactly.
Well, I'm not going to slingshot around the show to listen to this show again.
So a puzzle here is that Jurati is freezing inside the ship, and they don't have power for the transporter, and all this stuff's happening. But apparently, you can cloak the ship real easy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know why that happens, but
I imagine that was a lot of power. So,
they decide that since they've crashed near Chateau Picard, and slight bone to pick here with real world. I went to look up the location because it's Le Baire, France.
Yes.
Le Baire, France has these little tiny pockets of trees, and it's almost all irrigate, you know, it's all field.
Not a good place to hide a ship.
Yeah. So if they had come in at the very one end of one of these tiny spaces,
it would have gone through it.
They would have gone through the chateau by the time they stopped. But that aside, so they go into the chateau and we get the answer to a question we've been wondering since Star Trek The Next Generation premiered.
Yep.
Why does Jean-Luc Picard speak with an English accent?
Yep.
Find out because the family moved from France to England right after the war.
During the occupation. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they won't be back for generations is what he said.
Yeah. Next generations.
No. Oh.
Yeah.
And while they're there.
There's always a next generation.
Allison starts making some interesting things. Says, you move 15 beads on the abacus. You picked up volume 15 of the encyclopedia. And you picked up a Pinot Noir 1915.
Which I'm surprised is still wine hanging around.
And then she says something that blew me away. She said, well, that's very Dixon Hill of you. How did she know about Dixon Hill?
He hangs around with Picard, you know.
I don't think there's a La Serena that they can play around in.
I figured it's just a popular detective like Sherlock or something. You know,
it's also not the only reference to Dixon Hill we get in this episode.
Oh, did I miss another one?
Yes.
Okay, I wasn't watching close enough.
The author of the book that the woman is reading when Q is talking, and the title of the book. That is a Dixon Hill. I mean, it's not one previously mentioned, but clearly by the film noir type of cover and the fact that the author is the same.
Okay. Interesting.
It's a Dixon Hill.
I did kind of pick up on that. I was like, oh, I think I know what that is. Watching it a second time.
From the 15 reference, he infers that she's got some sort of subconscious note that we have 3 days. Wait, I just recall that it was April 12th and they have until April 15th. Weren't those the 3 days that it took the Titanic to sail and sink?
No, that was April. It sank on the 12th.
It sank on the 15th. It sailed on the 12th.
12th.
Oh, it sank on the 12th. Okay, good. We're not in a line with anything there.
The show's going to sink after this.
Exactly.
On this show, the topic is Titanic.
Maybe Girardi was just thinking about the day she has to file her income tax.
That could be. Yeah, we better save the world before tax day comes around.
Right.
What I found interesting is that it wasn't the 14th, because the 14th would have been the day that you would have an episode of Picard airing. The 15th is the Friday. The 14th would be the Thursday.
That would have been nice. That would have been nice.
I thought that was... I mean, it's not the right year. We're off by a couple of years, but... So before we go to this leads, let's go back to Rafi and Seven trying to find Rios, because they go to the clinic first where they're getting the signal from, or where they were getting the signal from.
Where did the comm badge go?
Right. I'm guessing that the kid took it.
It was on the counter. Maybe the cleaning lady took it.
Well, it's on the counter, but I don't think the kid had to run. So it's possible that the kid came back because he had it before. Maybe because, hey, I can get some more stuff for this by taking it again. So I'm not sure it's at the clinic. Maybe it is, but I don't know. But they have to go looking for him. So they get on a city bus.
Oh, here it comes.
Yeah.
And
you knew this was coming.
And the music playing is very familiar.
Oh, yes.
The lyrics are just a little different to add the word still to a phrase. You go inside and there is the punk with the boombox.
A few years older.
Kirk Thatcher, who was a producer and still works in film. And in his getup as the same punk from Star Trek IV.
Seven, word for word, says Kirk's line. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Excuse me, could you turn down the music? And he does this time. He goes, oh, I just really like that song.
The first thing he does is he goes for his throat. Like he remembers getting the nerve, pitch. And then he turns it off.
This happened back in the 80s. You'll have to forgive me. I was a lot thinner then.
So apparently he moved from San Francisco to get away from all that and is now living in Los Angeles and is coming back to haunt him anyway.
He also grew some facial hair too.
Well, it's interesting because if you think about it, that character, it's only a slight stretch because of the reason that he's in there doing that, but he's also in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yep.
Yeah.
Being that character as well.
Yeah.
He's definitely been typecast.
We need to see him. We need to see him somewhere else. Yeah, in several movies. It can be like Stan Lee and just show up as little cameos.
Well, he's now in multi-universes, so he's got to show up in another universe someplace. You know, Doctor Who is being the same character. Just Deadpool. In all the things.
They really went full on Lower Decks on that scene.
They should put him in Deadpool. That'd be awesome.
So you think it's going to be a very lighthearted scene, and then, you know, Rafi is still all tense, and Seven says, you have to deal with this. And she's just like gripping Seven's hand throughout this scene. Yeah. So it's like, it starts off one place and it ends someplace completely different, which I think is a great, you know, great thing to happen in the scene, that you're set up for one thing, but switch on you. They are able to get to the police station, and Rafi, still being very calm and collected about things, is yelling at the desk sergeant about, you know, where is he? And why can't you keep, you're supposed to keep track of these things. You're in charge of law enforcement. And now new and suave and sophisticated Seven plays good cop. I'm just going to back away from the desk now.
Yeah. And Rafi says, I hate everything here. And you don't let it show at all.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. That's right.
But we had someone helpful who says, well, if, you know, if your friend was arrested by ICE, he's not going to be here at all.
Wrong place. Yeah.
You need to go there and you need to get to him fast. Otherwise, he's going to be gone.
Yep.
And they decide to get there fast.
Yeah.
Because after Rafi just decides to break into a police car, even though she could have easily
unlocked
the door.
Yeah. Wait, and there's no alarm on these cars? That's what I thought was amazing. You just blasted out the window and nothing happened.
Well, you know, she didn't smash it in. She phasered it so it kind of vaporized.
Okay.
So, in theory, there was no impact.
Okay. And then they still opened up the door and there's still no alarm?
Well, that depends if an alarm goes off and just the door is opened, I suppose.
Hey, there's a police car stolen. Chad, you didn't turn on the alarm again?
Oh, Chad.
Chad.
Yeah.
I'm funner than Chad. No, stop that. You're not funner than Chad. Or Kevin. None of it.
The third time you did this, Chad.
So did Seven learn to drive? Was she puttering around in Tom Paris's pickup truck?
Well, it's quite possible. It's quite possible, you know. But another Easter egg that a lot of people missed in at this point is when they're about to leave, you know, Seven, you expect me to drive this? And Rafi says, you can pilot a starship, but you can't drive it. And then they take off. Back in the episode of Enterprise, what is it called? Street, something. I can't remember the name of the street right now, but they travel back in time and to Paul and Archer, Carpenter Street, and Paul and Archer have to steal a car. They get in and Archer is just like messing around with he turns on the radio by mistake and it's screaming a commercial.
Yeah.
And to Paul says, have you ever driven a vehicle of this era? And he goes, I can pilot a starship. Direct line, word for word.
They're going Lower Decks on us.
So
how many references can you put in one show?
And no, it's nice that they're subtle. You don't need them. You don't need to know that that's a reference because it's a good line on its own.
Yeah.
Especially this way it's treated differently, that she doesn't get a chance to finish what she's saying because Seven just guns it, you know, backwards out of that space. Yeah.
Right.
I love how Rafi just breaks into the computer. Once again, we have good old Star Trek security.
At least you didn't say computer.
Security override. All right, we're in.
All the computers in this era were connected.
Yeah.
Weren't they connected computer in the future too? No.
Password. Quaint.
Yeah. I'll just download the database.
But then ensues a merry chase through the streets of Los Angeles. And fun fact, in the ready room afterwards, Leah Thompson was on talking about directing the episodes. Mm-hmm. And something I did not know about the way they film car chases now, when you have the person inside the car and you're filming them. So you have the camera set up, but the person driving the car is on top of the car in a cage. On top of the car.
Interesting.
So check out the ready room that Leah Thompson's in. You can see some footage of this it's just the most bizarre thing. It's like, how is that not top heavy and just immediately fall over when you have to bank a corner?
Dangerous. Yeah.
Hey, you put a few sandbags down below and it evens things because out.
Apparently those old ways of doing the filming were banned. They can't do them anymore. So this is their current solution, I guess, to do it.
Well, you remember how it reminds me of how ridiculous it looks. Remember on Knight Rider, how they did that self-driving car?
Mm.
What they did was they had a seat cushion around the driver. So it looked, you know, he had like little holes so he could see like this.
It was a driving seat.
Yeah, he's in a suit that looks like the seat. Yeah, just, you know, kind of, it looks funny. Anyway, this reminds me of that, something ridiculous like that. Huh.
So making sure that they don't do anything that would be out of the ordinary when they're surrounded after Girardi says, you know, you have to stop.
Right.
They beam out in straight view of everybody who's there.
Which almost feels like beaming out of an elevator on Star Trek IV.
Except in the elevator, there's no one else in the elevator.
Right.
This, the police officer is staring in the window of the car.
As they beamed away. Yeah.
This beam out.
And he goes, what just happened here? Yes. Again, yeah. Not polluting the timeline at all.
So they end up, we leave them in this episode. They're standing on a hillside with a bus coming along that they realize they have to stop the bus.
Somehow.
Rescue Rios.
And get out of there.
Not injure anyone else and no butterflies. Oh, this isn't going to be a problem at all.
Just make sure you punch Leaf in the face for me.
Exactly. I think that will happen.
Okay, good.
Right.
Good.
Now, we find Picard
heading
to Los Angeles.
He's heading to 10 forward again. The guy's got a drinking problem or something.
Well, so I was watching somebody's review of this episode and I felt this was a valid point.
Hmm.
10 forward was the name of the bar
on the ship.
On the ship.
On
before
deck
Guy
10.
Got there.
Right.
Rather than in. When we see Guinan in like current day, if you will, rather than traveling to the past. Okay. Mm-hmm. She's on Forward Street, number 10 with a bar.
That kind of makes sense. Yep.
But for her to have a bar at number 10 Forward Street in the past seems a stretch.
Yeah. It's one of those cosmic threads. You just don't want to pull it. Mm-hmm. It was meant to be.
It was in the script. Just go with it.
Exactly. Exactly. But Guinan has no idea who Picard is.
Which seemed, I immediately went, what happened to Time Zero? Okay.
Okay, the producer, because people have this question. The producer says, because in the timeline they're currently in, the Federation doesn't exist. Because in the future, in that timeline, it's the Confederation.
So
there was no Picard and crew traveling back to rescue Data's head.
Oh, I'm getting a chalkboard from Doc Brown
exactly.
again.
Exactly. Right. So she can't know him from something that in this timeline never happened.
Right.
That's what happens. That's what happens when Leah Thompson directs. You're going to get some elements of Back to the Future in your show. Yeah.
She knows her stuff.
When I read the producer's write up on that, I went, okay. Well, you know, that kind of makes sense the way they imagined it. So, yeah.
Right. Because you could go the other way. It's like, okay, well, how come she remembers him as Picard from the future where there's a Federation, but there's no Federation? So I think between the two, it is confusing if you know Next Generation, but it makes sense if you're following the timeline of where they are.
My mind just went down a rabbit hole on yesterday's Enterprise with Tasha and Guinan as well. But never mind that.
Don't go there. Don't go there.
Yeah.
Don't go there.
Back on this timeline.
Yeah. So she says that she is not a watcher. And, you know, Picard is trying to convince her to stay. He doesn't believe her that she's not the watcher because, you know, he was
too perfect.
He was told to you know, to come
find
here.
The watcher,
and this was the place. And she says, no, I'm leaving. I've been on this planet far too long and I've just had it with humanity. It's just, you know, we have a few people that have most of the money and they just are afraid of losing more of their money. So they don't solve the problems. And, you know, we get it's very heavy-handed.
Yep.
What she's laying down.
Yep.
But it's kind of classic Trek at the exact same time.
Yep.
And it's Picard is there to give the counterpoint, saying things will get better if we can fix this. And you know, change always happens slower than we want it to happen.
Where's mm-hmm. the line? I wrote it down. He said, "History's darkest moments often lead to the most profound changes."
And he's trying to point out that there is still good. And in that point, we get more Easter eggs, because you gotta have Easter eggs at this point.
Right.
Floyd's barbershop is in the background.
Was it?
Yep.
So that doesn't belong in Los Angeles. That's in Mayberry.
That was in Mayberry, but it was also in New York, because that's the barbershop that Kirk and Edith Keeler walked past in Sitting on the Edge of Forever. And where they're taking the donations is the 21st Street Mission.
Right. Okay, so hang on, Guinan, because there's only 39 more years till First Contact Day, and that's when everything changes.
Exactly. So you just got to hang in there.
Right.
Go hang around with this drunk, you know, Cochrane, and everything will be fine.
Right.
But when Picard finally ends up dropping his name, because all the other clues, even the ones that apparently gave her time sickness, just don't convince her of anything.
I like that, time sickness. I'm going to claim that sometime.
She suddenly goes.
We've already seen it. Well, I was going to say, we already seen it with on Ren and Snippy, but that was space madness.
Totally different.
Because show, the topic is not Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a different syndrome.
His catchphrase was Ren and Snippy, so there you go.
You idiot.
But she takes him to actually see the Watcher, who's more of a supervisor of these people that protect certain people, you know, go to protect them in the timeline.
Yeah, we didn't really get a whole lot of details of...
Because Guinan's kind of sketchy on how it all works herself, apparently. But she
fell asleep at the initiation.
Yeah, she takes Picard to the park, where a girl comes up with
white eyes
and says that Guinan better get out of here, or she's just going to, like, you know, kick her in the face or something. It's, whoa, hey.
Yeah.
Because apparently the Watcher
escalated quickly.
Yeah, the Watcher is not a very pleasant person, but the Watcher is just using these people as surrogates because they want to make sure the Picard vessels. Was not followed.
Zombie helpers. I love it. I want one.
Yeah.
The big reveal we get at the end, which I think we saw coming by this point, or I did anyway, because of clips we'd seen of the series Picard.
I wish it was the punk guy was the Watcher.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
No.
But it's Laris.
It's the actress Laris.
But it's not. But it's not at the same time.
It's not.
She's not Romulan.
Nope.
And she clearly has powers of some sort, and she has a reputation.
And then they walk into this portal and disappear. So we don't.
Now, my question is, would it be Laris, or is it just that's a form that she feels Picard would respond to?
Yes, that's kind of where I was going to.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. So I don't think it's actually technically her.
It was somebody he needed to care deeply about and trust to go with her.
Right. Not like he had much of a choice at that point, but.
Yeah.
And then the final scene.
Yes.
Lady reading a book.
Outside of Jackson Roykirk Plaza. Jackson Roykirk, as you recall, was the scientist who worked on Nomad.
Yep.
And
you hear the narrative by John DeLancey.
And you're staring at this woman sitting down in the plaza reading a book, which we believe is a Dixon Hill novel. And I'm assuming pretty strongly that he's talking about Picard, but why he's saying it out loud?
I thought he was
a woman at the next table.
I thought the woman was reading the book and he was quoting the passage, whatever she was reading. That's what I thought was going
on. Okay. I can totally buy that.
The Dixon Hill reference with the cover.
I can totally buy that.
So I was like, okay, I think he's reading it. And then he was like, wait,
he decides to do his peace out exit by snapping the fingers,
I'm out.
And nothing happened. Nope.
All we heard was a snap.
Was he banned from the Q continuum?
Unexpected and unfortunate.
Well, remember, something's going on with him. We kind of always
right, got Picard hints insinuated and references that he was to that. Wrong.
Oh, yeah. He was sick or something. Him. Yeah.
Now, the question is it just wrong with him or is it the whole continuum?
There's a virus going through the continuum called COVID. And it's a.
It was also interesting that.
You lose your sense of taste and powers.
It was also interesting that for purposes of budget, they didn't do it. But okay, now that he's not hanging around with Picard, why is he still?
That's what I'm wondering. Maybe he's just old. in the. Oh, why does he look old?
Yeah,
I was wondering what he was doing there. Period. I thought it was just keeping an eye on things.
Hey, also note. He had the Euphoria jacket on.
The Europa.
I'm right. Sorry, Europa. Europa
which I'm thinking, wait a second now.
It just made him feel good to wear that jacket.
Yeah.
So he was wearing that.
Spider-Man going on here.
Not sure what that means, though.
Well, when Rafi is in the park where the sanctuary is set up and she's looking at the tower. There's a giant billboard for a mission, either Mission or Project Europa.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. I've got a feeling that's a lot more significant than just that.
They gave it a little bit of screen time, you know, or a prominence right,
twice
on the screen.
Right? Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Well, now three times because it's on his outfit right. too.
And there's a person in a jumpsuit in the background talking with someone else who has a lanyard. Presumably it's a pass that's probably involved with this exact same project. Mm-hmm. Now a kind of an ancillary tie-in is that Europa is where Book is sent to work with the displaced people from
the evacuation. 900 years ago. Actually more than that from here.
Yeah, it's a long way from there. But I thought it was interesting that Europa shows up in both of them.
Mm.
Yeah, so I don't know. I looked up Europa on Memory Alpha because I wasn't drawing anything from it. And it didn't seem to be anything there really either. I mean, there's a reference to that's where Book is going. But I don't know what the significance is here. If it has something to do with a launch, it has something to do with Nomad, it has something to, I don't know what the deal is, but Q is going to be a very little help at this point with whatever it is.
Yeah,
so he's going to have to hit the ride with Picard if he's going to try to pester Picard about anything because he just can't show up.
Can I get a ride with you, Seven and Rafi?
Shotgun, maybe. I don't know.
Why do you need a ride? We'll talk about it later. Yeah. Hanging out.
I got to see my doctor about something. All right. Any other thoughts on Watcher?
Nope. Liked it.
Okay. All right.
Which way are we going in the ordering this time?
So we'll start in the middle and work our way
out. You go first. You go first, Glenn.
I'll go first. Okay. That's not okay. So I will go first. I am going to rate this one. I'm going to rate it a little lower. I'm going to give this one an 8.5. I felt like it was almost as good as the episode we talked about first, Assimilation. And we have great action sequence in it. Lots of little Easter eggs that were fun if you knew them. Didn't matter if you didn't know them. Lots of true Trek commentary. I almost feel like it was too much going on in the episode. It was being held together, but just barely. And I think it was a little overpacked for an episode. So I'm going to back off a bit and say 8.5.
All right.
How about you, Craig?
I was going to go for an 8.5 too. I thought the joyride in the police car was a little bit long. You know, I was like, can we move this along? You know, after a little bit, cause all they did was jokes about how Seven can't drive or was.
Yeah. The police knew it was stolen the moment they left the parking lot. Why did it take them so long to catch them? But
yeah, that's right.
Okay. So you said 8.5 on each.
Yeah. I enjoyed it though. I do think that they're keeping the, the momentum going. There's a lot going on these episodes so far.
Yeah, it's not boring and slow. How about you, Chuck?
I'm going the other way. I'm going to ramp this one up. I think it deserves a 9. I thought, you know, like you said, it had a lot, and I wanted a lot. I maybe it was just coming off of Discovery, going, "Whew, that was a long journey." So, you know, I can handle some, you know, some fire hose at this point. You're right. It did have a lot of callbacks and references, and they were fun, and some overtly obvious. But I also thought that, I get the feeling this is going to be a pivotal episode for the series.
Mm-hmm. Certainly in conjunction with the next episode, I think.
9 for me.
All right. Excellent. So those are our reviews. If you have additional thoughts on that, you can leave a note over on our Facebook page saying you guys are totally wrong about both of these episodes, or say spot on. That was spot on.
Hey, by the way, I do want to give a shout out to Ito. I'm trying to remember her last name.
The one who played Young Guinan.
Yes.
There were moments when I know she was actually playing it on her own terms, but there were a few times she was kind of channeling
Whoopi.
Whoopi Goldberg.
You have to wonder if Whoopi was maybe given some, secondary direction, or somebody was saying, you know, Guinan wouldn't quite do that.
Yeah, there's a few things that she said, and I was like, okay, that did sound like Guinan or Whoopi would have said. Mm-hmm. So I thought she did a great job.
She said in an interview that she went back and she was going to watch all the Guinan episodes of Next Generation. She had seen them before, but she was going to, you know, concentrate on those. And she said, and I ended up with just a mini binge watch of like the first 4 seasons or 4 seasons of the show. Just kind of, oops. I didn't need to do all that.
Binge
but,
watch.
Wow. Okay. Right.
So right on. Yes. And where is Soji? We'll have to find out what Soji's been missing after episode 1. I don't know.
I noticed that as well. Like as soon as they jump to the past, I'm like, so what's Issa doing for the rest of the season?
I was
kind of
hoping she would have been in the mix here.
Well, I get a feeling she may come into play after Soon shows up.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, we haven't seen
that's true.
Soon yet.
Yep.
I think that will change things a bit. All right. Now it's time for a very quick Warp Speed Roundtable. Simple one this time around. We talked about the premiere of Star Trek, the motion picture, the director's edition. That's a really long title, by the way. coming to Paramount Plus on April 5th. But also being 2 nights, May 22nd and 25th, as a Fathom event in theaters. So my question is, will you be going to see Star Trek the Motion Picture, the director's edition, in a theater?
Wait, it's going to be in a theater?
That's failed. I have failed this podcast.
Ow, I'm hurt.
I certainly am tempted once I read... I didn't realize they were putting it back in the theater. I'm tempted to go see it in the theater again. Actually, I may end up dragging my parents out because of them, watched the original, you know, TOS and stuff. But I remember we all went to the theater and saw it originally and when it came out. So I think I might drag them to the theater to go see it.
Excellent. Yes, for me, some friends of mine had already talked about the fact that if it was going to be showing in a theater, that we should make plans to go to see it. So I definitely will be there. And I've granted the effects are much more cleaned up this time around. But I have seen it on a television set because I have the DVD of the 2001 version of this. So I'd like to see it big on a screen. What about you, Chuck?
I cannot. I will be on a plane to Sydney and doing a conference. So not unless they're showing it on the plane. So
well, then you're back to watching it on a small screen at that point.
Right. I will quite likely.
Chuck's got a large screen. He doesn't need to.
Yeah,
I will
quite likely get the 4K experience in home on the 75-inch.
And it's in 5.1 surround, I believe. And
Dolby Atmos, didn't
you say? Yeah, somebody was asking if Paramount Plus streams in that, and apparently some stuff they do and some stuff they don't. I imagine this they would if that's the case.
I would hope so, because they promoted it.
But I don't have a system set up for it, so I don't have any idea what is are the Trek shows. Does anybody have a setup like that in their house? Chuck, do you have a like a surround system set up? And is it
is
Trek broadcast in 5.1?
I don't generally play it loud enough, and I generally don't play it in there because the Paramount app on my Samsung TV sucks. I often wind up watching it on the iPad.
Well, there goes your 4K experience.
No, there I'll find go. A way to make that one work.
Impetus. All right, so sounds like two of us are going, one of us can't. We'll ask you the same question. Will you be going to see Star Trek The Motion Picture, the director's edition, in a theater? Or are you going to just watch it on Paramount Plus? Or are you going to do both? You can do both. Well, I'm going to do both, so because it's going to be there. I can watch it anytime I want to. Then
I'm definitely going to see it on April 5th for sure. I mean, when it comes on Paramount, you know, regardless, I am going to be watching it there for sure.
Okay.
100 times.
That said, it's time to refill the dilithium chamber and get out of here. And next time around, we'll only be talking about 2 episodes of Star Trek. So we should have a much shorter show. But you can find me, Clinton, over at Comedy Forecast, all one word with the number 4.com. Also find me on Twitter and Facebook and MeWe and Instagram. And I'm thinking also, you know those orange stickers they put on the stuff in the grocery store when you don't want to put it in a bag? Well, you can find me on that as well. All right. Who speaks for you guys?
The clearance aisle.
The dollar bin.
You go ahead, Chuck.
You can find us by searching for Technorama Podcast on the internet. You can find that'll come up in your search engine. Should point you to chuckchat.com or anywhere you can find your favorite podcasts. We've been doing Technorama since, Craig, we're coming up on 17 years. It's getting to be a long time.
You sound surprised, but we've been telling everybody that for the last 5 years. We're 17-year podcasters 5 years ago.
Well, it used to be when you put our experience together, we were 17 years. Now it's even worse. So, yeah, a lot of fun.
Right. All right, but it's time to hit the theme, boys.
It should be right there.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic Is Trek, don't
put on the red shirt. Quaconi Waquan.